Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. It's actually a very exciting show today on Franchise Today, as my guest is Dina Dwyer Owens from the Dwyer Group, and most recently appeared on CBS Undercover Boss, and we'll talk about that here in a bit. Also on the air with me today is Joe Caruso, co-producer of Franchise Today. Joe, how are you today?
Fantastic, Paul. Glad to be here and excited to learn more about Dina's experience on Undercover Boss.
You know, Joe, as everybody in franchising knows, this weekend starts the IFA's 52nd annual convention this year in Orlando, Florida, and I'm sure it's going to be a great event. And I think this is just perfect having Dina on today because Dina is a past chairperson with the IFA and like to also get some of her insight into IFA conventions and of course, everything franchising. And, of course, we will be talking about her appearance on CBS Undercover Boss. And, you know, everybody today and tomorrow is flocking down to Orlando. So the first thing I'd like to say is safe travels to everybody. Hope to see everybody down in, as I like to refer to, as Mickey Land, Orlando, Florida. Joe, also next week, as we continue with February being almost everything IFA, I know you had Steve Caldera as a speaker for the Capital Area Franchise Association several weeks back, of which you're the president of the association. And I know you discussed with him being on the show next week. What do we have to look forward to with Steve on the show next week?
Well, I think Steve is going to talk to us about certainly about the IFA convention, but one of the most burning issues in franchising is still credit access. And I think Steve will have a lot of news about where the access to credit, SBA franchise lending is going, the inroads that the IFA has been making with the SBA and with the federal government in helping gain access to capital for franchisees, because without capital you can't grow those unit counts. So he'll be on 16th to talk to us about it.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to seeing Steve and the other IFA staff at the IFA convention. And the following week, we'll have Nancy Weingartner from Franchise Times, the editor of Franchise Times, and she's going to kind of give us a light perspective and recap of the IFA convention. And then, of course, the following 2 weeks, we have Lonnie Helgerson, who had been committee chairperson for VetFran, and of course, franchising in the military is a big topic, and I've been seeing some press releases come out from the IFA this week with respect to unemployed veterans and getting entry into franchising, so that's going to be interesting. And then basically wrapping up the whole IFA month will be Catherine Monson, currently on the executive committee of the IFA, and of course, she's with Fast Signs, and she's going to be talking about their venture into international franchising and international franchising in general. So we really have a packed month. And then, of course, looking ahead, we're finalizing our third annual Franchise Legal Series, 7 weeks of the brightest legal minds in franchising. And, Joe, I always look forward to seeing what kind of questions and topics you have in store for us during that 7 week series.
Well, we put a lot of effort into coming up with the questions, and it's not all my work. I mean, we talk regularly on how we're going to outline these shows, and I don't think this year is going to be any different in terms of worthwhile content for those folks that are in franchising that need to know what they have to do to navigate the compliance areas in franchising and what the practices are that are going to make them successful and also mitigate any kind of risk.
Yeah, it's always a great series. At least the first two have been. I don't see anything left in the third series, and I'm always flattered We're always flattered because we get so many calls from franchisors telling us they're using the legal series as well as other episodes and segments of Franchise Today, using it for internal training, which is really great because, as you know, we're always promoting franchise best practices and really want to get into the meat of today's show because I know we have a lot of listeners on that are anxious to hear about today's guest. And of course, that's Dina Dwyer Owens. She has served as chairwoman and chief executive officer of the Dwyer Group since 2007. She is certified franchise executive with more than 30 years of industry experience. A little background, in 1999, the board of directors at the Dwyer Group appointed her to president and CEO. She, in 2010, was the immediate past chair of the International Franchise Association. In her role, she testified on behalf of small business owners before the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Small Business. She was a guest speaker to the China Franchise Expo in Beijing, shared the stage with President George W. Bush at the 2010 annual convention for the IFA in San Antonio. I saw that. I was there. That was great. She also spearheaded the reintroduction of the IFA's Vet Fan program in 2001, which now includes some 428 franchisors that offer franchising financial incentives to veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces. To date, more than 2,100 military veterans now own a franchise through the Vet Fan program. And the Dwyer Group has awarded more than $1.2 million in financial discounts to VetFran franchisees within its own system. Really a tremendous track record. And while many of you are familiar with the company, the Dwyer Group, those of you who aren't likely to be familiar with their service brands, which, of course, include AirServe, Glass Doctor, Mr. Appliance, Mr. Electric, Mr. Ruder, Rainbow International, and the Grounds Guys, with more than 1,300 franchises in North America and another 300 internationally. Dina, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you so much, Paul and Joe. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're certainly excited to have you here today, and I know the entire franchise community is excited that you're here today and excited, number one, for all that you've done in franchising, but it's really reached a pinnacle almost with Undercover Boss and now all the additional publicity and press even after the show. It's just been absolutely great. And I know you're beaming with pride, as I know your dad is looking down beaming with pride as well.
Thank you. It has been overwhelming, to be really honest with you, since the show aired. There have been so many wonderful people who've taken the time to write and send emails and Facebook tweet, you know, all kinds of just fabulous communication. So I want to tell those of you who are listening, I appreciate the feedback. It's really been wonderful.
Well, let's kind of take a few steps back and almost look at the beginning of your entry into franchising and the Dwyer's entry into franchising. The Dwyer Group is one of the most well-regarded franchise companies in the world and a category killer in multiple branded service channels. And it all started with your dad, Don Dwyer, born out of a paper route. How does a paper route turn into an unbelievably successful multi-branded service company through franchising?
That is a great question. And as I thought about that question, Paul, you know, it makes sense. You've got in New York City, of course, is where his route was. So he had to have all these guys meeting him at whatever, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. They had their own territories that they were responsible for servicing and getting those newspapers delivered in a lot of high-rises. So, you know, what an effort every morning. I don't even know how many papers he had to get delivered each morning. But in some way, it was his own little franchise model, you know, and had individuals and teams representing each area that the newspapers had to get delivered to.
You said you mentioned high-rises. There's no high-rises in Waco, is there?
Oh, no. This is all in New York City. You know, my family was my mom and dad were both born in New York and raised in New York, really, and most of my siblings were as well.
Wow.
I happened to be born in Connecticut.
Wow, I did not know that. And I wish I had access to this book, this small paperback that was written by your dad, and it has to be 20 plus years old, and it's in storage right now at my stuff because we relocated back from San Antonio to Houston, and all my books are in storage. But I remember this little paperback with his name on it, and I really wish I had reference to it today. What do you think? And I know in there he describes some of his secrets and his thoughts and his insight. What do you think was the secret to the Dwyer Group's and your father's success?
You know, my dad loved to do three things. He loved to build people, he loved to build buildings, and he loved to build businesses. But the thing he got the most satisfaction from was building people. He just loved building people and wanted people to be able to live the American dream. He always talked about helping people live the American dream. So I think, number one, it was just his drive, his personal drive to help others succeed. And he felt that franchising was a wonderful vehicle to help people do that. So his personal mission statement was to teach his principles and systems of both personal and business success so that all people he touched would live happier, more successful lives. So it wasn't just about the business success. It was about, how do I help you as a person achieve the quality of life you're looking for and achieve your dreams? And again, use franchising as the vehicle to do that. So that's what drove him. And he was very clear about where he was going to go. And he was also very clear about his foundation. We call that his code of values.
And definitely a code of values that resonates well throughout your organization to this day. And I want to kind of go back and I want to kind of, you know, look at Dina Dwyer, you know, back in high school, as you always do. I can imagine you were smiling constantly back then too, because every time I see you, you're smiling. You always seem to have the most positive outlook and the positive look on your face. Was it your life's plan to be, I mean, thinking back, you know, like I said, to a teenager getting into your 20s, was it your life's plan to be where you are today, running the company your father started, or did you really have something else in mind?
You know, as a teenager, my father had all of my siblings and I working at the age of 12 and 13, so when I was 12 and 13, it wasn't my plan. Of course, I just wanted to have fun with my friends, so I was the social butterfly, which in some ways I guess I still am because I love people. But back then, it wasn't my plan. And then in my early 20s, I still really enjoyed having fun with my friends more than I did working, to be perfectly frank with you. But when I had the opportunity to attend one of his conventions, and I attended all of them, but there was one in particular that was just kind of the shifting point for me. And there were more than one franchisees that came up to him and said, "Don, I want to thank you. You have no idea the difference you've made in my family's life by allowing us to be part of this organization." And to be a young person and to hear people sincerely thank your father for the gift he's given them, and it's their hard work that really made it happen, as we all know in franchising. We can provide the tools and the systems and the support, but if somebody's not willing to work hard, it's not going to happen. But yet they were giving him sincere thanks, and they were so grateful for having met him. And I thought, I get it. I get his mission statement now. And at that point, I said, I want to be part of this for the rest of my life.
That's awesome. And I think you also, unbeknownst to you, have announced the title of your next book, The Shifting Point.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I think it's great. Well, you know, certainly riding the popularity of CBS's very popular Undercover Boss, I mean, it really it seemed to be so timely that your appearance on the show on January 22nd preceded the IFA convention by a few weeks. And one particular question that I want to ask, and Joe and I bounced this back and forth, is, you know, how does the boss or company CEO or president get selected to go undercover?
Yeah, you know, I think there are companies that are selected. In our case, again, one of the great lessons learned from my father is never be afraid to ask. If you believe in something and you know, think there's an opportunity that will help others, knock and the door shall be open. So I worked with my publicist, Monica Fide, with BizCom, who's worked with me for over 15 years. And I just said, "Monica, I think it's time for the Dwyer Group to go undercover." We were celebrating our 30th anniversary last year. And I had the ambition when I became president and CEO in early 1999 I actually visualized renting an RV, taking my family out in the summer and just going across the country for a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and visiting franchisees and going out on the van with the service professionals that actually work on the front lines and just really understanding what they do, and then also getting ideas from them on how do we make the experience even better for the customer. Well, life got busy as a CEO, and I never made that journey except for locally. I got on the van with a couple of local franchisees, technicians, and had an experience, but it wasn't the same. So we proactively, again, through my gosh, Monica has just been a dream come true for me, and she reached out, and within a couple of days, Studio Lambert basically responded with, we want to do a casting interview. And within weeks, they were in Waco, Texas. I had been out of the country at the time, and they were in Waco within weeks to conduct what they call the casting interview, which is about a three-hour filmed interview that they then present to the rest of their team and to CBS. And then CBS's executives basically take a look amongst others, and then they make a decision to give what they call the green light. And we are very thankful for the opportunity that both Studio Lambert and CBS gave us to go undercover, because to me it was a privilege.
Yeah, I mean, and I do want to add to the credit that you've given to Monica, because I've had the pleasure of working with her now on and off over the last few weeks, and she's been absolutely great, and I can see why you've been working with her for 15 years. Also want to make a point with reference to the show back in the day when I also relocated from New York to Texas, and I dabbled in construction, and more specifically within the plumbing industry. You did a heck of a job moving a water heater around, I got to tell you.
I've had more people say they love that I wasn't going to let them help me. But I have to be really honest with you. As I was in that situation where I had to move the water heater, I thought of my sister Debbie, who is my older sister, but she's about all of 105, 110 pounds, and she is determined to do anything that anybody else could do, she can do it. And I thought, as he was training me how to manage the water heater, I thought, I'm going to do this by myself because Debbie would do it, and if Debbie could do it, I can do it. So that was my voice and my sister coming into my mind saying, Dina, don't you dare let him help you with this. This is something you can handle.
Well, it definitely seems like the Dwyers are full of overachievers. I think I just saw recently on Twitter, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your brother also received an accolade here as of late. What was that?
Just the night before last, he got Philanthropist of the Year from the local nonprofit called Mission Waco, now Mission Waco, Mission World, which reaches many, many lives, including mine, in a very positive way. And then just the weekend before that, my brother Donald and his wife got recognition for being Volunteers of the Year for their local elementary school here in Waco. And then about 3 weeks before that, my sister Debbie got recognition from, she serves on the board of a public school here in Waco and has done an amazing job for many, many years leading that board. And I could go on and on. I've got an amazing mother and amazing siblings who are doing so much good.
Fantastic. Well, you know, again, you know, IFA Convention is right here amongst us. We have people flocking into Orlando wanting to learn about best practices and things that they can do to build a sustainable franchise. And, you know, that's what our audience is made up of franchisor executives, franchisees, franchise suppliers. I think they'd like to hear what you had to do to make your appearance on the show happen. And tell us the timeline. And I know you had the preliminary interview and you had the green light and you were moving forward, but what did you have to prepare for, and in what time frame did you have to get this accomplished? And also, when did it air?
Yeah.
I mean, when was it taped?
Right. From a preparation perspective, I personally did not have a lot that I had to do, although there's some things that you probably would have never thought of. I had to go get a physical, for one, because I was going to be filming in the middle of the heat of the summer. And I had to go get my eyes measured and checked for contacts. I had to get a physical. It's just funny, the things I never thought about. But it was really the production company, along with CBS, who worked directly with my marketing team and Monica, to create the journey, as they call it. And I had to stay out of it. They are very strict about, Dina does not need to know who we're going to see. where we're going to be going, really, until we're on our way there. So they spent a lot of time behind the scenes out visiting with franchisees and the franchisees' employees. I think they interviewed over 100 franchisee employees to decide who I should visit with. And we've got 7 brands. So the unfortunate part is they didn't have time to, you know, highlight all 7 brands. That's just not possible in a 44-minute segment. But they did, in fact, you know, choose 4 brands and 3 frontline team members of our franchisees and then one franchisee, which was quite a surprise that I ended up meeting with a franchisee. So preparation-wise, there's a lot of little things that had to be done from my point of view in being ready to be away from the office for quite some time. CBS doesn't like us getting into all the details of that, but I did read an article this morning where one of the former bosses mentioned it took her 10 days, and that would be very comparable to the amount of time I had to spend on the road because we started in Waco in July, middle of July, and from Waco, you know, went to Atlanta and then to Memphis and then to Houston and then back to Waco. So it is a very time-consuming ordeal. And the production team was amazing. And the work that they put into making this episode what it was, I really, hats off to them and to CBS for the great work that they did because it is not an easy job. You know, an airplane goes by and you just film something and an airplane goes by in the middle of it and all of a sudden you got to recut it because you got the noise of the airplane interfering. And they're quite perfectionist at what they do so they can deliver real value to the viewer. So that journey was something else, though. And, you know, I don't know how much you want. I'll let you ask the questions. Otherwise, I could kind of go on and on about it.
Well, I guess, you know, being so visible, I mean, your face is so recognizable throughout franchising, and I imagine it's got to be even more recognizable through your own franchise organization. I mean, did you ever have a point where your cover was almost blown?
There was one occasion where I almost blew my own cover, and you may have seen this before on previous episodes where there's something that comes up where the boss is just like, you know, I just need to handle this right now. This is really bugging me. So in the situation with Wayne, who was with Mr. Reuter, he was talking about his compensation and was very concerned and rightfully concerned and used the word shady to describe the situation. And, you know, so in my mind, that was a description of our company, which really didn't sit well with me. And it wasn't his fault. It was just he was describing how he felt. And I thought, boy, this is the point where I just say to him, look, Wayne, I'm Dean O'Dwyer Owens, and I want to tell you that this franchise is a wonderful franchise operator. He cares about doing right by the employees, and my guess is it's a communication issue, which we have run across before. Sometimes the compensation programs that our franchisees set up are very complex and very hard to understand, you know, by just the, you know, the everyday person, you and I included. Tough to understand, and so we have coached them over the years to make sure that their compensation plans are clear and transparent and that they constantly communicate them to their team members so that there's no confusion, because when there's confusion, there's a lack of trust. So I really wanted to get into my whole piece with him on, I think I know what's happening here, but instead I took a deep breath and you know, went away from, I said I had to go to the bathroom, and I really had to go to the bathroom too, but went away from the job and basically called Mary Thompson and said, Mary, you know, here's the situation. Could you please address it with our franchisee? And Mary and all of my brand presidents, my team here is just incredible. And she got right on it, of course, and that certainly was what the problem was. So that's a point I almost blew my own cover. And then another point was when I showed up and I was meeting with Brock, the Mr. Electric franchisee, and I walked into his office and I'm like, oh my gosh, this one's going to be interesting because I had met him. He had been to Waco for basic training, of course, and my goal is to touch every new franchisee in basic training. But it had been a few years earlier. So at the end of the day, he said, you know, I was wondering if that could have been you, but I didn't want to embarrass myself because I wasn't certain it was you, so that was a little awkward.
That's funny. Dean O'Dwyer Owens seems to be the type of person that tries to excel in everything that she does. How was it that Faith rode the lawnmower in a crooked line when I know Dean O'Dwyer Owens would probably do so in a straight line?
Practice makes perfect.
Was that on purpose?
No, Paul. I was really bad at that lawnmower, and yet they let me ride it for another 20 minutes, and I got that baby down. I want to tell you, it was so much fun. Once I got it under control, I actually put it into higher gear, and it goes pretty fast, like a go-kart. And I was doing 360s out on that lawn. Not that I should have been doing that probably on somebody's lawn, But I got that good a control over it within about 20 minutes, and you guys didn't get to see that, but I had a blast. It was so much fun. I was awful at the beginning.
You know, usually with people that are very passionate like yourself, emotions could also run high. How did you hold back on your emotions when the individual that you were speaking with, the young gentleman, was telling you the story about, you know, his father, and he was now responsible for raising his five brothers? That had to be very emotional.
Boy, as you might have noticed, I have a hard time holding my emotions back. And in that particular case, I was shocked. I literally was shocked when Jacob told me that his father had committed suicide and his dad was only 48 years old. I don't recall if that actually was clear on the episode, but and this young guy, you know, just took on this huge responsibility, helping his mother and his brothers. So it was tough. It was very tough. And I think when I got back to Waco, and one of the things that surprised me most about this whole filming was the CBS's willingness to follow my routine, because my routine is I work hard to attend Mass every morning before I even come to the office. I just need that. I need that grounding, and I need to keep things in perspective because life can get very busy in the franchising world, as we all know.
Yeah.
And that helps me.
Yeah.
And then for them to allow me to come back to church, which is what my instinct would say I need to do. When I walked into that church, I fell apart. You guys only saw a piece of that, and I thought I was composed by the time they did that particular filming. But when I first walked into the church, I was overwhelmed because of the experience I had had with each and every one of these team members, and everybody's got a story. And yet every one of them cared so much about our customer. You know, I spent a full day with each one of them, and they really were so conscientious about making sure the customer had an amazing experience and that they did the job right the first time. I was overwhelmed when I walked back into church, and I just thought, oh, my gosh, how blessed am I?
Well, that's quite a commitment, and I didn't expect anything less, although I am surprised to say you try to go every day, which was really great. And so many people, including myself, say, oh, we don't, you know, have the time. And clearly, I don't think anybody in franchising is as busy as you. So if you have the time and can make the time, certainly we all can as well. What's happened since the show has aired for both the Dwyer Group and for Tina Dwyer Owens personally?
It has been wild, and I guess up in the Northeast they call it wicked. It's been terrific response, but overwhelming. I have personally tried to touch as many of the emails, cards, and letters that have reached my desk, and now I've actually I'm getting the help of an amazing intern over at Baylor who's coming over, and as I'm driving from one place to another to the airport, back from the airport, I'm on the phone with her as she's reading these cards and letters and emails to me and asking her to type the replies because she's much faster typing than I am. So what I'm hearing from people is, number one, they're so thankful to see that there are real people running companies out there today. And I think that it's unfortunate that through the news we only see the negatives about corporate America and the bad things that are going on. We're not seeing all the great things that are happening. I think about my franchising friends, all those of you who are listening to this. It's a group of really great people who care about their employees and their franchisees and are doing everything they can to try to get more people involved in something that's great for America and great for their local communities. But the viewing public doesn't know that. They don't know how wonderful franchising is. But you know what? Because of Undercover Boss and other shows like it, they're learning so much more about the goodness that's coming out of franchising. So that's showing up in the communications I'm getting. They're thrilled with the fact that there's a company, and there are more companies than myself, who have values and really work hard to do what's right by people. And we are not a perfect company at the Dwyer Group, and I've said this over and over again because we're a company run by human beings, but we care, and we're going to do our best to do what's right by people. And when you do that, it's amazing the success that occurs in your businesses for everybody involved, not just for the CEO, but for everybody involved. So that's been overwhelming. I've had people who have really complimented the fact that I wasn't afraid to share my faith. And I am a Catholic CEO. The Dwyer Group is not a Catholic company. We're a company that's very diverse, and you know, we're about people doing what's right. And our code of values is, you know, the foundation we use for that to make sure we're measuring ourselves and holding ourselves accountable. But people were surprised that I was willing to do that on national television. They were surprised that CBS was willing to allow me to do that on national television. So, you know, we have people who are interested in franchises. We've got an overwhelming response of people looking to invest in one of our brands. We have people who want to come to work for the Dwyer Group or for one of our franchisees. I think to date we've received over 650 applications for employment. And then we've got people saying, I didn't know about your brands before, but you know what? When I want one of your services, I know who I'm going to call now. It's just been unbelievable.
I could see through all the social media where, of course, I am incessantly involved, the reach that was far beyond franchising. There was so many comments that I saw. And I take it that choosing the name Faith was no coincidence.
You are such a smart guy, Paul. You know, part of the show is you've got to have an undercover name. And CBS had asked me to come up with, I think, four possible names that I believe that I could remember. And I think that they have to have a series of choices because they probably do, you know, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing they do background checks or criminal checks to make sure that name doesn't have anything attached to it that would be negative or cause problems for them or for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went back when they asked me what name, Dina, would be so easy for you to remember because that's the ones you really need to submit to us. And I thought back to my very first interview as the CEO of the Dwyer Group in 1999. Of all magazines, it was Glamour magazine, you know, which was a real thrill to me. But
mm-hmm.
I certainly wasn't the cover girl. But there are so few female CEOs at the time that they were doing a story called Successful CEOs. So instead of CEOs, it was CEOs. And their question was, we want to know your three secrets to success. And the first thing that popped into my mind, whether it's a secret to success or not, it's where I draw my strength. And it's my faith. So number one is my faith. Number two, it's my team. I am surrounded by an amazing team, and that's on purpose. You know, you have to build a team that supports your strengths and your weaknesses. So I've got an amazing team, not only here at the office and out in the franchising field, but my family is an amazing support team for me. And then my third answer was systems. You know, franchising is all about systems. So those three things are my secret to success. And I thought, Faith, why wouldn't I use the name Faith? Because that is something I need to continually grow in that area of my life, and that's something I'm never going to forget. So I submitted Faith Brown, Faith White, Faith Jones. I had four Faith names. And they said,
names.
Yeah, they came back and said, Faith Brown's perfect. It'll work.
Nice. Very nice. Well, I know Joe and I always talk about, you know, systems and processes. And I'm sure Joe has a question for you with respect to your appearance on the Dwyer Group. Joe, what's that question?
Well, she appears on the Dwyer Group every day, but I'm curious about Undercover Boss.
That's what I meant.
But in any event, Dina, you know, I'm curious, during the show, was there any point in the show where you were saying to yourself, why in the heck did I do this? This is the biggest mistake I have ever made because this can't possibly be going well.
Well, you know, there are risks to go undercover, and I knew that going in, but again, I must not have been too worried about it because, you know, we were proactive in approaching Studio Lambert and CBS. So I knew there was risks, but I worked so hard to build an organization again with our code of values as our foundation for success that if I'm afraid to find out what's real out there, then I'm not the right person to be running this company. So there were a few times along the journey that I said to myself, not so much, you know, why the heck am I doing this, but I was really more concerned about what's the final product going to look like because I had no control. So one thing the viewers or the listeners need to know is, you know, you give up a lot of rights because you have no editing control at all. And what I do know about Undercover Boss, and I would have never approached them had I not known this, is that every episode that I had watched, and I don't watch much TV, but that is one show I did try to watch every time I could, was that they always did right by the companies. And they have to, of course. But I think the bottom line was, a few times I just said to myself, I don't want anybody to be hurt in this whole process. This journey is about uncovering things that maybe are great in the company, but also uncovering things that might need to be changed or improved upon. So I did a few times had to pause and say, boy, I hope this turns out the way that I would intend for it to turn out, where nobody that's agreed to participate is going to get hurt in this process. And I think CBS and Studio Lambert did a very nice job of putting the final cut together because they had to take a lot of days of filming and, as my son said, stuff it into 44 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the potential for embarrassment and the risk, you know, was certainly so great, and you know that's got to be a little bit scary, because not that it's going to hurt you, destroy your company, or not that it's going to be so embarrassing that you won't survive it. Nobody likes to be embarrassed, and you certainly don't want to embarrass any of the folks that are part of the show that didn't really sign up for it. I mean, I imagine they have to get released to be on TV, but certainly those folks, you know, they're working a job, and you certainly don't want to create any risk for them. I will tell you also that I did get somebody that did complain about you being on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaint was, she made me cry. and I won't tell you what franchise male executive said that to me, but, you know, she made me cry.
I have had more men admit to me that they got emotional. I have had presidents of hospitals write me letters saying, my wife turned to me and said, are you crying? And I had to say yes. And it's a funny thing, you know, first of all, I believe that real men do cry, so I'll say that publicly here. But I think there was a father-daughter touch that came out that I never expected to touch so many lives in the way that it did, because there's so many dads out there that want their kids, first of all, to be proud of them, but also want their kids to grow up to do something special. And I think that touched a lot of men in a way. And I think even, you know, spending time with Tana and even with Jake, you know, I've had different people say different things made them cry on the episode, but God bless them. You know what? It's okay to cry. It's okay to laugh. You know, and I had people laughing at me. And so the vulnerable part of it was, I knew I was going to be embarrassed. I knew I was going to be terrible at some of the jobs. And I just had to say, have some fun with it. What the heck? I can't expect to be great at all these things. I don't do these every day. And you had, you know, as leaders, we have to be willing to be vulnerable. That's just the truth of it. And at the same time, we have to be real. You know, we've got to have compassion. Otherwise, we don't belong in a leadership role.
Yeah, I think the show was so unscripted and true and authentic that you were successful in humanizing CEOs, humanizing big companies. And putting it into perspective for people that may not understand how things actually work in the business world. And I think that was a benefit to franchising, a benefit to the Dwyer Group, and a benefit certainly to your franchisees.
Joe, you're absolutely right. And that's, again, the letters have just demonstrated that to me. One of the other things, I think one of the long-term benefits that the Dwyer Group of companies, and I hope other franchisors are going to receive from not only my episode but other franchising episodes, is that the consumer now gets the importance of systems. And I have franchisees who were concerned about the situation with Brock, my Mr. Electric franchisee, who wasn't following all the frontline steps. And he admitted it on national television, not that he knew exactly that it was going to be exposed to 10 million viewers. But the bottom line is he was honest. And the truth is, not all of our franchisees follow the systems. But you know what? Today, I have more franchisees that are following the system than probably in the history of my company, and it's only going to get better because now the viewers have a personal relationship with me. That's how they feel about this. That's the kind of letters I'm getting. I feel like I know you. And if our franchisees aren't following the system, I'm going to hear about it, and that's an opportunity to get better.
I think you also raised the bar for other franchise organizations to follow suit.
Good.
Yep, I think it's real good. You know, and I know you've been very active in franchising with respect to VetFran and military service personnel getting involved in franchising, and that's going to be a big topic at the IFA convention this weekend. But I also saw a stat this morning on CNN that's very troubling, and they're talking about the young people in America, where unemployment is at 8.something%, and they said the young people, 18 to 24, the unemployment rate is 16.8%, and that's staggering. And I bring that up because the Jacob that was on the show with you, who we just talked about, I think he's like 20 years old. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct.
And so there's a lot of young people that are out there that obviously need work. And then also the young woman that worked for your franchise up in Conroe, which, of course, is right in my neck of the woods because I live in the Woodlands. And she was a young mom. I don't know what her age was, but relatively young. How important is it in franchising today to start getting the younger generation involved in business, even if it's at the employee level, and then start looking down the road towards franchising as possibly, you know, the career alternative that they may need, especially since it doesn't look like these unemployment rates are going to drop quickly?
I think it's extremely important. I had the opportunity with Undercover Boss, in fact, to go and do a screening. We had a pre-screening of the episode about 5 days before the show aired, and that was at Baylor University. The Hankamer School of Business sponsored us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had about 500 to 600 students/faculty members who were part of a 1,200 person audience. And I've had more of those students coming to me and saying, how can we get involved in franchising? Can you help us understand more about franchising and how we can be part of it? So since then, I've already spoken to two 1301 business classes, kind of the basics of business classes, and one ethics class over at Baylor since that screening. Kids are hungry. They're hungry for this kind of stuff. And, you know, we start in the high schools in introducing kids to franchising. And I don't know how we get franchising into the high schools, but that would be something I'd love for a listener to figure out, or maybe you already have the answer and you can penetrate those high schools and educate these kids about the opportunities that franchising offers, and then let them go to work for franchisors. In our business, we've got something called the Hire Program. I briefly mentioned it at the Public Affairs Conference during the VetFran panel, because it's not just for veterans, but it's also for anybody who comes to work for our franchisees. We call it hiring individuals, recruiting entrepreneurs. So get people to come to work for you, and it may be just at the entry-level positions, but the longer that they stay working for the franchise,
sure,
the greater their opportunity for a discount in our companies, for a discount towards the purchase of their own franchise territory. Who better to have as a franchisee than a young person who has grown up in one of your franchise businesses? And after 10 years, we actually offer a 50% discount towards the purchase of a standard franchise territory. So we are catering to veterans, but we're also catering just to anyone out there who's got the ambition and drive to one day want to own their own business.
I think that's great. What a great acronym, HIRE.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hiring individuals, recruiting
entrepreneurs.
That's fantastic. You know, I had the pleasure of actually talking in the high school, speaking in high school, to the DECA group, and they do, you know, a lot of debating, and it's entrepreneurial based. And the youngsters were just like a sponge, holding on to, you know, every word regarding entrepreneurship. And to put a fine point on that, I know recently after Steve Jobs had passed away, Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, was asked, will there ever be another Steve Jobs again? And he said, you know, I never would have thought so, except we're in such an economically challenged time that there's so many young individuals, very talented and very educated individuals, that are either unemployed or underemployed, but are very entrepreneurial, that I think that not only will we have another Steve Jobs, but we will have another Bill Gates, we'll have another Larry Ellison, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that just speaks volumes at the talent that is basically the future of America. And I'd love to get more and more involved in bringing in the younger generation into franchising and entrepreneurship. And I know that the time is right, and you're right. How do we get franchising into that level? And I think it's something that we need to work on. And, of course, we talk about the IFA and all the great things that they do. And as I said again, you know, the convention is starting this weekend. I know you're a great advocate for franchising through your work with the IFA and as the past IFA chairperson. What are you looking forward to this year at the 52nd annual convention?
To be real honest with you, is just getting together with some friends of mine that I've met in franchising. It's so much fun to catch up and you know, just have some fun with them and learn from them too. So there's so many things I pick up when I'm at the IFA convention. One is, you know, just the whole networking with old friends as well as meeting new friends. I don't ever leave there without having met a lot of new people that I stay in touch with. The second thing is, when it comes to government relations, I really rely on the IFA to keep me educated. I am so busy running this business and you know, my family that I do not spend a lot of time in that area without the IFA's help. So I'm so thankful that I will get caught up. I feel like at the convention I'm going to get caught up on what's going on with this whole election and the way that you know, the leaders at the IFA are thinking about that, because we have some amazing people, amazing minds, political minds, that are part of the IFA, starting with Steve Caldera, but you know, our government relations team, and then just some of the board members and other franchisors and franchisees and suppliers that are just active in that area of our business. And I'm looking forward to that, because I really need to get in touch. I've been out of touch for the last 2 weeks since the show has aired. I've been up to, you know, two in the morning every night, just trying to keep up with the flow of emails and information that's coming my way. Oh, and one other thing, I cannot forget this. You talked about VetFran and my passion for VetFran and veterans earlier. This is the first time we're going to have a VetFran pavilion, and the Dwyer Group is a proud sponsor of that, along with a few other folks. And we're just excited to bring some veterans into the convention this year, in hopes of either helping them find employment with franchisees and franchisors, but also, you know, sharing with them the opportunity franchising has to offer as it relates to owning their own businesses. So I'm really excited about the VetFran Pavilion and just the focus on helping more veterans.
Well, that's great. That's very exciting. You know, what recommendations do you have for the individuals attending the convention to make their investment worthwhile?
Yeah. You know, the first thing is don't be afraid to introduce yourself to somebody you really want to spend time with. What I have found is that franchising is a very friendly community. But if you're afraid to go shake a hand with somebody who you'd like to get to know and learn from, then it's not going to happen for you. So there's usually I think they've already put out the registration list, so you can clearly go through the list and say, these are people I want to meet, and then go out of your way to meet them. And whether it's at the, you know, the roundtables, or supplier roundtables, or the executive roundtables, or it's you know, one of the general sessions where you can just go find a seat with these people.
Right.
I find that people are just so willing to share in franchising, and that's, yeah, I give so much credit to the IFA and the friends that I've made in franchising, because after my father's passing in 1994, I turned to so many of them for help, and they gave it. And they gave it very, very freely.
And I think one of the things, and you and I had talked briefly before, right before the show went on the air today, about earning the right, and I know part of that is basically resonates through your code of values. And one of the things that I think we need to emphasize to the people that have been in the IFA for a while as members, you know, take some of these newer people under your wing, share your experience. I think that's important. That's how we're going to continue to grow. And I know I've always been pleased by some of the people in the IFA that, you know, years ago took me under their wing when I knew nothing. And it's neat to see them to this day, but I try to go out of my way and find the people that are wandering around like a lost sheep, overwhelmed by there being 3,000-plus franchise executives that they all think are smarter than them. We all put on our pants at the same way every day.
That's exactly right. I think you're right about re-earning our positions. All of us have a right, I think, to each other in protecting, and the IFA's responsibility to protect and enhance franchising worldwide, but we all have that responsibility and that duty. And I would love for people to follow your advice and go out of your way to say hello to people who you see as a new timer, because I think we have very clear identification on their badges that lets us know they're a first timer to the convention. And we should all be ambassadors. Those of us who have been so lucky to learn from each other, we need to reach out and help those new people as well.
Absolutely. In preparing for today's show, I spend a lot of time with Joe, and Joe really digs down into some of the issues. And Joe had said, you know, as involved as Dina has been in franchising with the IFA, we would really be remiss in not talking about how franchising has been affected by the economic downturn. So I'm going to turn it over to Joe for another question and have him ask you about that.
Well, Dina, you know, the since 2008, we've had an unprecedented economic slowdown. You know, some people are calling it the Great Recession, and the lack of capital for franchisee borrowing has put franchising plans on hold for a lot of franchisees currently and would-be franchisees. Do you see things improving? What is your franchising outlook for 2012 and beyond 2012?
You know, I think it's I see growth, but I see it to be very slow. Slow but steady growth, and Steve Caldera and the team at the IFA are working their tails off, along with members. You know, members are very involved in trying to help free up this access to credit. I remember hearing a statistic about for every $1 million in credit given to franchise organizations, there's another 34 jobs that are created. That is staggering, and we have got to continue to work hard to free up credit. And yet, I just know this has been on the top of Steve Caldera's to-do list, along with, again, many of the other team members, Jack Earl and the leadership team there at IFA are working very hard at this, and I think they're making progress. I'm hoping to learn more about the progress we've made, to be frank with you, too, at this upcoming convention. I'm going to pay close attention to that.
Well, and also there's going to be the Small Business Lending Summit coming up in April, which the IFA puts on with the National Restaurant Association. So I think that that's going to be interesting as well. How have your franchisees at the retail level fared during our current recession?
You know, we have never been able to, the 30 years in our history, up until 2008, we had never noticed a recession on our books, ever. And unfortunately, we too were affected by that recession. Some of our brands still had very strong growth, some single-digit, some double-digit growth. Other brands did not. Some had double-digit declines, which we are just not accustomed to. So we were affected. And the good news is that we have a diverse portfolio of brands. And so we remained flat as an organization for 2 years. And now we're back to growing pretty nicely again. But we were affected, and that was a strange thing. We didn't lose customers. But the good news is we didn't lose customers. But we had customers who weren't investing as much in taking care of their homes. They were doing more repair jobs than replacement jobs. So I guess the good news to that, too, is we are fortunate that there's a pent-up demand now of replacement jobs that have to be done sometime in the future because customers can't continue to have leaky pipes and the things that our franchisees deal with. But we were hit by it, and that had never happened to us before.
Yeah, and deferred maintenance can only go on for so long. So
that's the good news for us. Unfortunately, not all franchisors have that same wonderful situation.
Yeah, food franchises, there's not deferred eating.
You can't go back. Yeah,
and there's not pent up demand.
Right.
But in any event, you talk about growth. What are your organic growth plans, and do you see adding any additional brands to the Dwyer Group portfolio?
Yes, of course, we've got so much opportunity for growth organically, and looking forward to a very exciting 2012 on that end. But I am looking for acquisitions, so we've got posted on our website, you know, what our strategy is for acquisitions. We want complementary service businesses that cater to the same customer base, basically the residential customer and the commercial customer. And I'm having a tough time. I want to be real honest with you. It's hard to find good, already existing franchise businesses out there where the franchisor is ready to sell. Valuations were hurt during the recession. And I don't, frankly, I don't blame them. There's some founding companies out there that are just terrific brands, but those founders are trying to get their multiples or their valuations back up, so they're getting rewarded for all the work they've put into those businesses. So I appreciate that, but we're on the lookout.
And when you talk about organic growth, is your definition of organic growth from your existing franchisees picking up new territories or a new franchisees coming on and developing their territories that they
All of the above. We're looking to help our existing business franchises grow their businesses. And one positive thing that came out of the recession is everybody sharpened their pencils. We all got kind of fat and happy, I think, before 2008 hit and got a little sloppy made in the way we managed our businesses. Because business, it wasn't a problem to get business for us anyways. And so people had to really kind of sharpen up their shops. And so the good news is going forward, as they grow, they're going to find, I hope, greater profitability because they've gotten a little tighter on the expense side of their businesses. So organically through the existing franchisees, we also want to add new franchises to all of our seven existing brands. And, you know, we also have an international opportunity that is a big, big opportunity for us going forward. We're not spending a lot of time on that this year because we've got so much to do here in North America.
Now, do you have a lot of cross-pollination between the brands where someone owns an AirServe and a Grounds Guys or multiple franchises of different brands, or do they pretty much own territories that are of, let's say, the Glass Doctor?
Yeah, we have both. We have less than you might think on the multi-concept franchise owners. We have, gosh, I would just guess maybe 40 or 50 of those who own more than one of our brands. What we have a lot of, though, are franchisees who have the same brand. So the multi-unit situation seems to be more successful for our franchisees. And as they grow their businesses, of course, franchisees that are really following the system and doing a good job with it get to the point they get bored. That's what happens when people are driven. You know, they build the businesses up, and they're like, what do I do now? So when they get to that point in their kind of business life cycle, that's when it's a good idea for them to add on an additional brand. So they've got the management team in place. They've got all the capital they need, and that's when they can bring on additional brands instead of just, you know, additional units.
Well, Gina, as we're heading to the top of the hour, Gina, I wanted to ask you probably a loaded question. What does the future hold in store for Gina Dwyer Owens, the Dwyer Group, and your family?
Yeah, well, first thing that comes to my mind is the future is bright. You know, we have such a great team of employees and franchisees, and now I'm even clearer about the frontline team that's representing all of our brands. So we're only going to grow, but I think we're going to exceed my dad's wildest dreams. You know, he thought of building a $1 billion business, and at the time, before he died, he wanted 10,000 franchises doing $1 billion in retail sales. And, you know, we've got approximately 1,600 franchises, and we're getting very close to the billion mark with 1,600. So, you know, I see us growing. We'll have prudent growth, but I think it's going to become a much larger organization than even he had envisioned. And for my family, you know, I love what I do here at the Dwyer Group, and I'm so blessed to have a husband who puts up with me and kids who are just terrific kids. That's probably the hardest job I have is that whole balance piece and making sure that I am spending good quality time with my kiddos, especially my son who's a sophomore in high school still. So I have to say no to a lot of things so that I don't miss his baseball games and his football games and the things that I'll never get to relive again with him. So that's the piece that I've got to really work hard at managing is that whole balance side of my life.
Do you see a future for your children in the business?
I would love to see that future, and my husband and I have handled it a little differently than my father did. We didn't have a choice as kids. We were thrown into the business.
Right.
My kids haven't had a choice in that they've had to, you know, travel with me and go to a lot of business meetings and hear me talk about the code of values much more than they've ever wanted to hear me talk about the code of values. But what's interesting now that my daughter's 21, she's a student at Texas Christian University, is she is so interested now in what's going on with our business. She's studying fashion. But on her own, she's just really, really becoming intrigued with what we do at the Dwyer Group. She's worked here. She worked part-time in the summer with Mr. Electric. So that's interesting to see her asking more questions about it. But we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. I've got lots of nieces and nephews who are now it's funny, after watching Undercover Boss, they're like, Aunt Dina, I really want to learn more about this franchiser or about that system. Isn't that funny? They had to see it on national TV to really kind of get what we're all about.
Well, I definitely think the youth in your family are the ambassadors for bringing in more young people into franchising. Right there, we've identified the book, the shifting point.
Yeah.
And now we've identified the ambassadors to bring on the youth of America into franchising.
This
Dina,
has been a great use of my time,
really,
guys. Thank you.
It was really a great pleasure having you on today. I look forward to seeing you in Orlando. And hopefully have you back on the show again in the future. Thanks so much for taking the time out of it, which must be an unbelievably busy schedule right now.
My pleasure. You guys keep living rich. I appreciate all you're doing for franchising.
Thanks. Joe, another great segment of Franchise Today on the books. thanks for all your hard work. Next week, I know we've got Steve Caldera on. Certainly exciting times in franchising. Thanks, as always, for being a co-producer. Franchise Today will air again next Thursday live. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.